Hey everyone, just a quick request before we get going. We're hurtling toward the end of the year, which means dictionaries and other places, I guess, are coming out with their words of the year. We'd like to know what yours are. So send us an email. I'm at Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L, at KMUW.org. Kathy and Ross are K&R Petrus at gmail.com. That's KANDR Petras at gmail.com. Send us a message with your nominations for words of the year, and if you'd like, some guesses about what dictionaries might end up with as the word of the year. Thanks. We'd love to hear what you think.
From KMUW Wichita,
from Toronto, Ontario,
and from Armenia, Spain,
this is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words.
Let's talk words. Let's talk shortened versions of words. Abbreviations. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus. Hello, Kathy and Ross. We had so much fun with abbreviations last time around that we've unabbreviated that segment, and we are going to do some more in this episode. But we do have a few things to take care of. First, one is a listener email.
Ed in Vancouver wrote, "A friend recently said, 'The sooner the better' to me. I thought about it later. I just retired from teaching ESL for 30 plus years. Congratulations, Ed. And articles are always difficult for students whose languages don't have them. One thing I taught was the article must be followed by a noun or adjective. Adjective noun?
Adjectival noun.
In 'the sooner the better,' 'the' is not followed by a noun. At least I haven't figured out what a sooner is."
Oh, that's somebody from Oklahoma, by the way.
That's right. What is the purpose of this "the," and what is it if not an article?
This was a really good question. Do you have any ideas, Fletcher, or not?
Yeah. Okay. So, oh, wait. I was going to just basically elongate that sentence, but I'm still not sure it makes a difference. I was going to say, okay, what it really means is the sooner this happens, the better it is, right?
Right. It does. That you're getting onto it. That's exactly the clue.
So how does that fit in with what he's asking, which is where are those nouns?
Okay. Let's go. First of all, the sooner it happens. Okay. What is sooner in that sentence? What's sooner doing there? Let's make it easy. The sooner you do it, the better is the same thing. This better is the second half of the same idea. The sooner it happens, what is sooner? What role is sooner playing in that little sentence or in that phrase?
I don't know how to express that.
What is it happens? What part of speech is happens or doing? What is it? The sooner it happens, the sooner you do it. It's modifying do, right? Or happen, right?
Sooner happens. Happens sooner.
Okay, doing, to do or to happen are both verbs. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so what modifies verbs?
Adjectives?
Adverbs.
Adverbs, right. Yes, that's what I meant.
Adjectives modify nouns.
Right.
That's what you meant.
Yes.
Okay.
Fletcher has a cold, everybody, so he's forgiven for that, okay?
So basically you have here, this sooner is an adverb. Right? Because it's modifying the sooner you do it, the sooner it happens, the better it will be.
Okay,
or the
okay,
better.
Okay.
Okay, so we have an adverb modifying a verb. Now, in grammar, when you modify an adverb, you have another adverb. So in this sentence here, isn't that fun? So in this sentence here, the sooner it happens, implied it happens, the better implied it will be. Is the thes in both cases are adverbs modifying another adverb.
What?
That's your grammatical lesson of the day.
Oh my gosh.
And now let's take a second for our brains to stop exploding and calm down.
Oh, that's wild. Okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? You would never have said off the top of your head that the was an adverb.
I didn't.
Would
I
you?
Didn't say
I wouldn't
it.
Have.
I didn't say no. It even after repeated grilling by the two of you.
Because I had the first thing you think of how Ed did it. I think he's right. You go sooner. That's not a noun. What
right,
is it?
Right.
And you're thinking of it as like a separate little thing. It doesn't make any sense. But that makes sense.
Yeah.
It does make sense, but not really.
Well, you, I mean, the way you
guys described it. No, it's still kind of like Wonderlands. I don't know. It's still kind of like.
Well, the problem with English really is we have all these terms, adverb, adjective, and all that. But we're shoving these sentences in, and you know we're shoving these words into sentences, and it doesn't strictly apply. Like we have another example for adjectives. The New Oxford English Dictionary defined the in this sentence. What's the matter? Call the doctor. Now, you look at the doctor. The in what's the matter? Call the doctor, and you're going to say, well, it's an article. The doctor. They argue here, in this case. The denotes, quote, one or more people or things already mentioned or assumed. So they're saying the is an adjective. It's modifying doctor.
I'm sorry. I cannot accept that. I really cannot.
I don't either. I think it's like call that doctor. And it's like a determinant. What you would call a determiner. But these guys, and I think Kathy is right. And I think a lot of other people are right in saying it's not technically an adjective. But a very authoritative dictionary called it an adjective. And I think herein is the key aspect of English. Who knows? But I kind of like, but I have to say.
I can't handle it.
I like the sooner as that analysis of the sooner. I think that's sort of fun.
I guess one other thing it tells us about English is that it's really easy to argue about.
Yes, it is. Very good.
Yeah. Yes. And here's another fun, capricious English. We have another email. From Hill in New Orleans.
Very good.
I'm confused, and I hope you can help. My problem, oh gosh, the verb awake. I wake up in the morning, I awaken in the morning. Fletcher?
That was it.
If you're awake, Fletcher, can you answer this?
I am half awake. I did have to awaken my child to get her off to school this morning. Awaken? Did I? I did have to wake her up anyway. I have no idea what's going on here. There can't be. It seems like one is maybe like an old version of something. Maybe awaken is old.
Ooh, wow, Fletcher. Okay, the thing here is awake and awaken are two different verbs. People assume that awaken is a form of awake. But they're not different tenses of the same verb. Uh-huh. Awake is a verb meaning to rise from sleep.
Okay.
And awaken is a verb that means to rise from sleep.
But they're not the same. Oh,
okay.
No. So
let's see Fletcher now parse. What? Let's go see Fletcher get these.
What?
Let's do this. Let's see. Let's do this fun one. Let's do the past tense of each one. Fletcher.
Fun for whom, Ross?
I know. I'm like rubbing my hands here. Okay, the past tense, Fletcher, for awake and awaken.
Okay, awake, awoke.
Good.
Okay, awaken, awakened.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Kath, do you want to get him on the next one?
Past participle.
Also, let me say, I would not say that Cthulhu awoke. I would say that Cthulhu awakened or was awakened.
That's
yes.
True.
Right? I think awakened has a better like woo sound.
Yeah.
It sounds a little more heavy, if you will. Okay. Past participle.
Past participle, which was like I had done this. Is that right?
Or was.
She was.
Awoken?
Yes.
Ooh.
And I think the other one is probably still just awakened, right?
Yes.
Whoa.
Wow.
Now that one really gets me. I don't think I would ever say, it sounds awkward, awoken. I know it's correct, but would you ever use
awoken.
It, either of you?
I was awoken by a crash. Yeah, I mean, I would say like the crash woke me up, but
yeah, you know, that's what I would say too.
I don't think it's like super awkward. I think it.
I just would never say it. That's all. I just don't think I would ever say it.
It sounds a little odd. Yeah, she was awoken. Did you have this, Ross? Dad used to always yell at me about saying woke up. It's not woke up. You too? This is driving me crazy. And I was always like, yeah, it is, Dad. I used to fight. I was like, yeah, it is.
It's so funny you say that, Kathy. It's so funny you say that because I look at, you know, we're running woke up and I always say woke up. But I always go like, I shouldn't say woke up. I do. It's like
I know. Dad said I shouldn't say it.
Absolutely fine by now. Where did these, so they're two different verbs. Where did they come from? Because it's weird if they came from the exact same, like, origin and then developed alongside each other. So do you know where each one of them came from?
So you're saying, like, okay, so where did awaken come from versus wake? Awaken comes from, what is it? Awaken in Old English, which means to spring, is an intransitive verb, to spring into being. And then, interestingly enough, the rousing from sleep comes from the 1500s. I didn't know that. Did you?
It's pretty late. No, I did not. The OED is saying that, but yeah, the form history got complicated because the two wake, awaken, and awoken were all got all kind of muddled.
Yeah.
All those three.
So they.
Which makes sense.
They might have meant different things in the first place, but eventually they sort of all gelled together and became to mean the same thing.
They come from the same exact Proto-Indo-European root, obviously, as well.
They do, yeah.
But one was maybe like just waking up, as we say now, and another one was maybe springing into being, and then over time they sort of just both ended up meaning waking up.
Well, the one interesting thing is the causative sense of waking someone up comes from the 1300s. Rousing from sleep and awaken comes from the 1500s, which is interesting. So I think, Fletcher, your theory is correct, probably. I mean, they kind of got mushed up over the years.
Wow.
The weird thing is that we use both. That, like, I would think by now we kind of like stick with one and be done with the other, but we can't decide, I guess.
Although, I'm just trying to think, how often do you use awaken versus awaken? How often do I use either? I'm just honestly trying to think.
I have to wake up tomorrow early. I don't think I ever say awaken except in.
I always say wake up or woke up.
Woke up.
I think I would do it poetically. I think I would do it if I were writing, you know, like Cthulhu type of thing, like Lovecraftian novel.
But what would you do for the past participle? I was. What would you say?
I was. That's
funny. I was woked.
That's funny. I was
awakened.
Honestly, I would probably say I was woken. Would I say I was woken up? That seems weird.
I was woken up. I think I might say I was woken up, even though it sounds wrong. Yeah. I think I might, though,
I might.
Yeah, I was woken up by the dog. Yeah.
It's not correct, but I think I would say it too.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. It's really weird. That is really interesting. I was woken up yesterday.
I might say I was awakened. I might say I was awakened.
I was awakened by the dog.
Actually.
I mean, what I would say is the dog woke me up. No. I mean, I would say the dog woke me up is what I would say.
Yeah, right? I would too. I think I would also say I was woken up by the dog. Yeah. I think I might.
I think I might, but
colloquially.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting. All three of us are basically agreeing we might use the wrong tense, we might use a wrong form of a verb, which is really interesting.
I think that it's good. I think it's English in action, isn't it?
But what I'm wondering about, actually, when you said that, though, I'm actually wondering, will that end up becoming possibly correct? It's really interesting. Yes. We have three people, three different areas of the world, and we're all saying woken up as possibly a usage.
Oh, I think there's no question that that's going to become the going term. I actually do. I'm not saying that, you know.
I'm just going to look up woken up right now as we speak.
It's easier. It's clean. It makes me happy. I think it's very. It's a good choice. I do.
I like it too. What's also interesting, you know, if we heard somebody say some of these words, it might seem a little odd, just maybe a little stuffy. But if we read any of these versions of waking, awakened, awoken, whatever, we wouldn't think anything of it. We wouldn't be confused or anything. It's just interesting.
Hold off, everyone. Stop everything. Merriam-Webster has
woken up is right.
Is correct.
Oh, really? Like correct, correct. Yeah. Not even like a begrudging.
No, they have it as correct.
Okay.
So does Cambridge. So let's belay that. Let's belay that whole aspect here. We all have been proven wrong.
Or right.
Yes.
Or
that's
right.
True.
I prefer to think we're right. Yeah. Awakened is more formal, woken up more common.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So moving along, we're going to go back to our quiz.
Back to our abbreviations.
Yes. And the first one is?
RX.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Great. This is something I want to know about. I never have understood.
Yeah, it's
I
mean, an interesting
one. I assume it's some Latin words or a truncated Latin word, but I've never known
what it is. Well, when in doubt, isn't it always?
Yes. Yes, basically.
That's why we have Ross here. Okay, what is RX most related to?
Yeah.
One, an abbreviation of recipe, as in a compounded batch of ingredients.
Ooh, good.
Two, a straight abbreviation and clipping of prescription. Three, a medieval abbreviation of remedy, with the X replacing the full remedium to make writing simpler, a la the brevigraph we spoke of last week.
Oh, brevigraph is like when you change a letter?
You change a letter so you can make it quicker to write
yeah.
for the scribes.
Yeah. I like the one about recipe. I like the one about mixing things together.
You got it, Fletcher.
Yeah,
you
cool.
did very well.
How interesting.
The R stands for the Latin recipe, which means to take.
Uh-huh.
Recipe, take. And that would, you know, take whatever, two aspirins or whatever. The slash was interesting. We were talking about slashes last week as in, you know, AC, etc. The slash used to be stuck through a letter to indicate that it's the letter in case is an abbreviation. So we have R abbreviation.
And then there's like, so it's an R, and then on the tail of the R is the little slash through it. And so it looks like
yeah.
an RX.
Yeah.
And now a lot of times we just write the letters RX.
Yeah.
But it was originally a slash through the letter.
Because I always thought that slash through the letter was just fancy.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought yeah. it was just made it look nice.
Oh, that's really interesting, Kat.
I just want to say in Spanish, when you ask for a prescription, it's receta, which is also the word for a recipe.
Yeah.
So when you go to the farmacia, you ask for your receta, but you ask for, if you go to your cookbook, you're looking at a receta. So
yeah,
it's the same thing.
It's that. That's what I was going to say. What really gets me is the cookbook medical sort of, you know, overlap, which is really, as a kid, that always sort of got me. But a lot of times when you get, like, you know, we sell early printed books, and a lot of times early printed books will, they'll be recipe books, literally, and they'll have all sorts of, you know, how to make duck soup, but also how to, like, you know, cure chilblains or something. So it's, like, connected in that sense.
Huh.
And then we got kind of like, you know, more technically happy, you know, keep these things apart. But in the old days, a lot of times books would have both in them.
Weren't recipes called receipts
yeah.
as well?
Yes. Very. Receipt books were very common in the 1800s, 1700s. And they were basically, a lot of times they would be having turtle soup next to catarrh, you know, cures or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one is spa. S-P-A. No period, nothing. Okay.
Okay.
Is SPA an abbreviation or acronym from the Latin salus per aquam, health by water? From the Latin again, aspargo, meaning to moisten with drops. Initially spar and then the R was dropped. From the Walloon espa, spring or fountain, by way of the Belgian town spa. This is a toughie.
I guess I'm going to do the one about the Belgian town because I did always think it was related to a town. But I may be thinking of things like Bath, you know, which is also a town. But I'm sticking with that. I think it's the Belgian one. I didn't think it was like an abbreviation of multiple words.
You're right.
Okay.
We tried, Ross. We tried.
We did.
Yes. Yes. It's from a health resort in eastern Belgium, known since the 14th century, that features mineral springs,
mm-hmm.
believed to have curative properties.
Mm-hmm.
And it came from the Walloon espa, meaning spring or fountain. That's a shame.
It is. Let's pick. I'm going to jump ahead because this will maybe we'll get him on this one. Then we can go backwards. Okay. Mm. OZ.
Oh.
What does ounce as abbreviated OZ derive from? One, from the medieval Latin word bronzium, bronze, later contracted and referring to the 16th part of a large bronze coin. Two, a Latin word uncia or uncia, meaning 12th part.
That's where inch comes from.
From French onze, 11, coming from the old French, which itself derives from the Latin word unidecim or unidecim.
So we have 16, 12, and 11.
Yeah. Well, you would expect it to be the 16 amongst those. Maybe inch and ounce come from the same word. What do you think? Let's go with uncia. Uncia?
Fletcher?
Yeah.
I know. Jeff, explain it. We're depressed. Go on.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got it.
Yeah, it comes from uncia? Uncia?
Well, I mean, uncia would be, but uncia is easier to hear. Yeah.
Uncia, which was then an Italian onza. And the, so the Z came from the medieval scribes shortening onza, which came from uncia.
Mm-hmm. But how did it become both inch and ounce?
But you mean like, why did it get, well, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean.
Well, isn't that where the word inch comes from too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So how did it also become ounce, which is a different, like a different measurement and also has nothing to do with 12?
Okay, well, the 1/12 of a pound, they're like two different measurements. I don't know much about measurements.
Yeah, that's fair.
But there's like Havre de Dupuis measurements where it was 1/16, which equals 1/12 of a pound in the Troy system of weights.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
I'm telling you that. Now,
oh, God.
I don't know the Troy system. I don't know Havre de Dupuis weight, whatever. But one was equivalent to the other. So 1/16 okay. equals 1/12.
Okay. So it was 1/12 of something at some point.
And then it switched over. Okay. Yeah. And then inch, of course, is 1/12 of a
right.
foot. So that's right. But I saw that with Troy and Havre de Dupuis, and I really should have done more research. But I thought, like,
that's what
I don't care. I don't, yeah, no.
No, yeah. You said that you was.
I know.
You
I don't want to know.
It's, related. Like,
yeah. It's one way of doing it. That's what they did. Let's be happy with it. No.
I have a question, though. Havre de Dupuis, wasn't that, I always recalled reading that, referring to someone's butt and stuff when I was a kid.
Oh, because it's heavily weighted. I think it's because it's weighty.
Oh, is that it? Okay, because I remember that in British books, they talk about like someone's Havre de Dupuis, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and I,
yeah.
When I was a kid, I don't know, whatever, you know. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it. Because it's like a lot of weight there. So I'm looking at.
Okay.
But
okay.
Kathy, I think you're. I have that too. I do think of it that in a sense of like. Being mean about weight, you know, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think of when you said the Troy versus the Havre de Dupuis. I was thinking, like, what does someone's yeah. butt have to do with this, you know?
Yeah, no. Well, I guess it does if someone has a big one, but I don't think, because that also got me not to go over here, but the hanging part, like the poi part is from hanging down, so let's leave this and go on to something else.
Well, we're going to do one more weight one, Ross, because we have it, which is LB.
Yes. As soon as you
pound.
Said weight, I thought, oh, I hope they do LB. Yeah.
Okay. So why LB?
Mm-hmm.
This is, we're going to give you the easy part first. This is a two-part question, Fletcher.
Okay, Latin.
What is it related to?
Oh, okay.
LB. We can give you a hint if you have no idea.
You just want me to come up with it. No choices there. It's related to...
We have no choices.
It's
here.
Related to book. No? It's not related to book? Okay.
I'll give you a hint. It's an astrological sign.
Libra? Okay. Scales.
Yes.
Scales then. Okay.
Libra
so,
for scale as in weighing.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, okay. So we have Libra is the abbreviation. LB is the abbreviation of Libra
mm-hmm.
in effect. So thus pound. But what about the pound?
Actually, though, let's go backwards a little bit. Now, why would it? Do you have any idea why it would be related to Libra?
Because scales measure weight?
Right. That's exactly it.
Okay.
Because the Latin word Libra means a balance or a pair of scales.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, now let's move on, Kath.
Okay, so where does pound come in here?
The word pound?
The word pound came from Libra pondo, a pound by weight. Okay?
Okay.
That's where pound came from, the pondo.
Okay.
So the pound... Oh, Ross, we never finished this, did we?
No, keep talking.
Vamp.
I can talk till the night is young or old or something. You know me. So the pound came from the P-I-E word, spen, which means to stretch. Okay? That's where pound came from.
Okay.
Do you have any idea why stretch might be the reason we have ponda, meaning pound, which was libra, which came to lib?
I don't know. Do you have any theory?
Well, I think stretching is being like weighty, you know, hanging on to something is what I think. That would be my guess.
Well, that's exactly where it came from.
Yeah.
It was, we think, that it was the weight of a thing measured by how much it stretched a cord.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
So you have the stretching there, and then you have the ponda, and then you have the libra pondo, which was pound by weight. So it's like something, the scale weighing the stretching thing that was attached to it, which actually is like those hanging weight things, like when you have, you know, at butchers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there you have LB.
Huh.
It's very roundabout.
Huh.
It's also really interesting to me because earlier Fletcher guessed it's related to Lieber book, which I think is a really reasonable feeling. I don't know why it is, but it sounds like it would be. And the words in Latin, you know, liber and libra are completely unrelated to each other, which is really, I just looked it up on my Latin etymological dictionary. And liber may probably comes from a Sicilian coin. And then it was borrowed, we called a litra in Greek. And then it was borrowed into Latin. And then from there it became, you guess you're weighing coins. Whereas book comes from a completely different source. I'm not quite sure where. But isn't that, it's just so interesting how cognate, you think these words are related and they're completely unrelated, which is sort of interesting. Because liber comes from basically, you think leaf, which would be like leaves of a, you know, page or whatever.
I didn't realize that the symbol for the British pound is like the RX. It's the L with the slash through it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to look around for all these lines through things. This is like opened my eyes to a new world. I had no idea.
I've got a Latin manuscript that is like mounded with lines through stuff. You can have it. So, I'm trying to read it now and it's horrible. Okay, Fletcher, here's another email we got. And this was another one of those messy English messes. Let's put it that way. Okay, the email is from, I think, Rich in, I forget where, Seattle. Okay. When discussing a mountain, why do we say only mount when it is placed in front of the name, but mountain if it is placed after the name? We answered, now that is a very good question. And our answer was, and that was a good way to delay the whole thing, because like, we had no idea. So, I mean, it's when you think about
Rich.
It. So, Fletcher, just think about it for a second. It's true. I mean, you know,
Mount
Everest.
Yeah, Mount Everest, escape to which mountain?
Yes, perfect.
That was one of our examples to him, was which mountain.
why do we do it? It sounds better. Mount something sounds very important, and something you wouldn't really like, which mount, that sounds weird.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it just sounds better. Okay, sometimes that's enough.
Well, they're pretty much what you said. I mean, mountain is a definition. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, like, you know, that place is a mountain, so therefore it would become after it.
Right.
Mount is like part of the name, basically. Mount Everest is a place called Mount Everest,
right.
Which is the name of
Everest.
It's a
Everest mountain called Mount Everest.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's about it.
It's just kind of like a title of the thing, right?
And that's all we could come up with, basically.
Oh, wow.
But the problem is there's no fixed rule, because we thought, okay, so mountain's usually part of a name. Mount is usually part of the name, and mountain's the definition. But then there are places with mountain as part of the name, like Mammoth Mountain, we found.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw in here, there's another place where you call Mount the place, like as in the Sermon on the Mount.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Isn't it?
The Mount.
Yeah. Not Sermon on the Mountain, even though it wasn't on a mountain anyway.
Yeah, maybe that's why, right? Maybe because it
good
wouldn't
guess.
Be Sermon on a mountain. It would just be on a rock.
Yeah.
But you also have Peak, like Pike's Peak. You don't say Pike's Mount. Mount Pike.
Mount Pike.
Or do you say, you don't say, nor do you say Peak Pike either. So.
Well, actually, Pike Peak without the apostrophe would be bad too. Pike Peak is not
no,
doesn't sound
not
good.
Good.
It sounds like a snack for chickens or something.
But the key thing here is we have no way of knowing. So we're sorry, Rich, but all we can say is part of the name. And the other way is just what it is. So the one thing I am wondering about, though, is actually I just thought of something else. Under the sea, they always sort of flip me out. Seamounts. Have you heard of those?
Uh-huh.
They're kind of the top of extinct volcanoes, and they kind of rise out of the ocean. But they're not. They're underwater, and they're called seamounts.
So they're not islands.
No.
Okay.
That always seems sort of freaky. You ever see those pictures of underwater, all these like things under... deep under the water. And then
I don't. I never
down.
Liked underwater. Yeah, no. I always get worried about underwater stuff. So I don't look
too.
At the pictures. I really don't. It's just like it's under there. It's okay.
But interesting. But seamount is also a word too. So we do use mountain in some ways mount in some ways as a mountain too, but not that much.
Which one is older? I'm looking. Okay, so mountain is from about 1200 in English, from the Vulgar Latin.
Mons, which would be
both, both mountain and mount come from the same, I would assume, of course.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like mount is really used often other than as the place of a name, unless you're being poetic.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't. Although, interestingly enough, mountain was used for a fairly low elevation if it was prominent, they said too, in Sussex Downs or whatever, or the hills around Paris, you would say. You'd call them also
mountains. You call them mountains?
That's what they said. Yeah, I didn't know that. The term mountain is very loosely used. It commonly means any unusual elevation.
Hmm.
In central New England, central New York and New England, elevations from 1 to 2,000 feet are called hills. But on the plains of Texas, a hill of a few hundred feet is called a mountain, according to elementary geology.
So it's all relative.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So see, we're not only learning English, we're learning geology.
Yeah, no, because
no.
that
topography.
Geography. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
So it's all very relative. So a hill,
yes.
A hill in the Himalayas would be a mountain in Texas.
Well, they do call hills in the Himalayas. They do call them hills. You're right. That would be hill country.
Yeah.
Would be lower foothill. We say foothills, actually. But they'd be mountains in Texas.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, everything is relative in English and in all languages to some degree or another, and here we have one.
Aren't you glad you wrote, Rich?
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.